Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. Today, I'm very happy to introduce our special guest, Dr. Mark Granick. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
I'm great. I've known Dr. Granick for, for almost 30 years or longer, actually, I think, at this point.
Yeah, about that.
And Dr. Granick is a professor of plastic surgery. He's originally from Long Island, New York. He went to Cornell University, where he majored in biology and attained a BA. He then went to the Harvard Medical School and graduated with an MD. He performed a residency in Harvard in otolaryngology, health, and neck surgery, and then at the University of Pittsburgh in plastic surgery. And the reason I think he went into plastic surgery is because they were not doing any reconstructive surgery in ENT when you trained. And so plastic surgery was at that point entering an era of great progress developing reconstructive alternatives. He chose an academic career working in medical schools and training students and residents, and he actually directed and developed the residency program at the Rutgers Medical School in New Jersey. He's done research as well as in the laboratory as well as clinical research, and his clinical practice covers most of plastic surgery, but he is also interested in surgical wound management and reconstruction. And he received a Distinguished Career Award from the medical school faculty at Rutgers, which is given to one doctor a year. So congratulations on that, Mark.
Thank you.
So, as I told you before the show, many of the listeners are my teenage and young adult patients who are trying to figure out what career to go into. So could you tell us how you picked the medical career, like go way back to high school or college days and walk us from there?
Well, it's a hard decision, actually. I wasn't leaning necessarily towards medicine. I was quite open when I went to college. And I was doing research in college, and it was a time when NIH was under assault, and all of these people were coming out of the basic science areas and unable to get jobs. And I thought, gee, it's not going to be a great career being a biologist. I need to do something else, and I decided to do medicine.
So that's how the NIH was assaulted in the past, too, huh?
Oh, yeah. It was at the Nixon era.
Things go around and around. So you picked, why did you pick medicine? There were other choices out there.
Well, it was just something out there that seemed attainable, and the breadth and scope of all the different things that you could do within medicine was pretty impressive. And when I was up at Cornell, we took a field trip down to their campus, the medical school campus, which is in Manhattan, and had a lot of fun there and was very impressed by all the amazing things that they were doing, so I thought it was a really good career option.
So going to medical school, did you know you wanted to be a surgeon, or how did that go about?
Well, initially I wanted to be a nephrologist for some reason. I don't know why. As I got into it, I liked the immediate feedback you get from treating patients and seeing them get better. Which is something you see with orthopedics, plastic surgery, and some of the other surgical specialties. In medicine, they do a lot of interesting things, but it's a a different kind of patient that you're dealing with. You're dealing with mostly chronic illnesses. And I just didn't enjoy that quite as much.
So just to clarify, so nephrologist means a kidney doctor. And when you say medicine, right, you're talking about internal medicine, taking care of adults who have problems. Did I say that
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
So you like the surgical specialties. And actually, I resonate with you, Mark. When I was in medical school, I liked that in surgery you can just fix problems. But I didn't like the lifestyle because, like, as I recall, when I was training, you had to get up at 5 in the morning and work very long days for years at a time. Did you consider that? Was that an issue for you?
Yeah, it was, but I decided to go forward with it anyway. Actually, the time it was really an issue was when you started residency. I mean, in the days when I did my residency, you were on call for one night, and the next day you'd work till 7-8 o'clock at night, go home, and you were up at 4 in the morning, back in the hospital by 5, and then you had two nights on call, and it just sort of varied one night, two nights, on and on, endlessly. And it was it's pretty extreme, but you can adapt to the most amazing things. So
yeah,
you adapted to it and got used to it.
Yeah. Humans adapt, and I actually got a sense of that because I did two surgical rotations as a medical student. No, as a pediatric resident, I did surgical rotations, which I liked, but they were crazy hours.
Yeah, the hours are a bit nuts.
And in those days, I guess people could stay up 24 hours and survive it and still work. Now there are laws against it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been a plastic surgeon now for over 40 years, and I'm still taking call at night. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, I think the attending doctors work harder than the resident doctors these days.
Well, I would say our residents work pretty hard.
They work pretty hard.
I don't know that I could do that all over again.
Well, you know, we call them residents because they used to reside in the hospital. That's where the name came.
That is true. Yeah, so the whole process has changed a lot over the time that we've been in medicine. And it's much more humane now. And it takes a little longer to train because you don't get as much happening. You don't see quite as many operations as we used to. And you don't get that hands-on experience around the clock. But, you know, if you take an extra year and do it, you come out the same.
Right. Well, when I was a resident, they said, the surgeon said, if you are on call every other night, you miss half the cases.
Exactly.
So how did you pick ENT as opposed to any other surgical specialty?
Well, there were a couple reasons. First was that ENT involves a lot of the special senses, hearing, vision, taste, and others, and it just the anatomy in the area is very, very complicated. So it just had an appeal to me. Once I started in it, I got interested in head and neck oncology, but was extremely frustrated by the lack of ability and interest in reconstructing patients after these big operations on their tumors and so forth. So I decided to do a plastic surgery residency, learn how to do that kind of thing. And even during my first 5 years in plastic surgery, I concentrated on head and neck oncology. I just did my own reconstructions, or then with my partner. And it wasn't until we left Pittsburgh and moved to Philadelphia that I reoriented my practice and started doing all the other stuff in plastic.
Can you just define reconstructive surgery? What does that mean?
Putting things back together. So, for instance, if somebody has a skin cancer on their nose, and you have to remove it in order to treat it. And once it's been removed and you've made sure that all the tumor's gone, you've got this hole there and you've got to fix it and make it look good. So what reconstructive surgery is, the process of using your knowledge of anatomy and the tissue that's involved and designing a reconstruction that repairs things so that they look good and function normally. So that's what reconstructive surgery is all about. That's also one of the things that separates plastic surgery from other types of surgery. It's a specialty that teaches you how to think a little differently, because every problem that we face is individualized. So we have to know all the principles and all the anatomy and apply it to specific clinical settings for specific patients. So every time I see a patient, for instance, with a nasal cancer and I take the lesion off, it's a different kind of reconstruction that I have to do because of the variance between people's skin types and the location and the size and so forth. So it's a challenge.
When you take out a tumor, are you already thinking how you're going to reconstruct this, or do you take out a tumor based on how you're going to reconstruct?
No, you take the tumor out to take the tumor out. And once it's done, you figure out how to do the reconstruction. Now, you can have a couple of ideas ahead of time. Obviously, you want to think about it and have an idea what you're going to do. But until you actually see the defect and assess the tissue, you can't really make your final choice.
Because in other areas of surgery, like they have like in surgery through small incisions, which makes recovery much better. Is there equivalent to an ENT?
Well, no, ENT didn't specialize in small incisions. That all came around when laparoscopy became a thing. That's when they make little incisions and they insert tubes through the skin into a body cavity, and they can look around. So if you take a tube and you put it through the abdominal wall, which actually is surprisingly not that thick, you can insert the tube, then put a camera through there, fill the abdominal cavity with a gas, and then everything in the abdominal cavity can be seen. You can touch everything with forceps and other little devices, and the people who do that kind of surgery get unbelievably adept at manipulating all these things and can do amazing things through tiny little openings. Yeah. That hasn't hit plastic surgery. We don't do that.
And can you also give us a simple definition of what is plastic surgery? What does that mean?
Well, plastic comes from the Greek term plastikos, which meant to change. And what plastic surgeons do is they change things. We can take somebody with a bad injury and change things around to make it look more normal and function properly. So it was an interesting term that they chose to describe it, and it sort of defines the specialty pretty nicely.
Now, you've had a career of 40 years, and things have changed a lot in medicine over those years. Do modern scans help more in the plastic surgery than they used to, or how do you use technology in this field?
Well, technology is a big help in many ways. The kind of technology I find really useful are the imaging technologies. When I started, CT scans hadn't been developed. So the only way you could look into a body and see a structure was with a plain x-ray. And told us a lot, but, man, it's like nothing compared to what we can see now. So we can do CT scans, which is computerized tomography, and we actually can see all of the structures inside the body and the bones and a lot of the pathology. So you really get a roadmap as to what's going on. And MRIs, which are magnetic resonance imaging, that particular technology doesn't use radiation. It uses inherent magnetic waves, and it's all done through big magnets. It's pretty amazing. The technology is phenomenal. And you get to change the way the energy is being assessed, so you get three or four different kinds of views that show you different things, even though the anatomy is the same. So that, too, is exceptionally helpful.
And as we're talking about technology, if we take a leap to the future, in 20 years from now, do you see AI in some way changing plastic surgery or ENT surgery?
Oh, I think it's going to change all of medicine, but I'm just hearing all that stuff. I'm more of an analog surgeon, so I don't totally understand all the aspects of AI and what it can do, but it's really being recognized as a powerful force.
I'm thinking that trained properly, I suppose when you're deciding how to approach a patient based on their appearance, for example, there could be more than one approach. Is that true?
Is oh, yeah.
Involved there?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know,
so I'm guessing
aesthetic surgery is a big part of plastic surgery. It's not my area where I really chose to specialize, but I'm still involved with it. And all of the aesthetic surgeons out there, cosmetic surgeons, develop their own techniques, and everyone's a little bit different. So when our residents learn, they go around to different hospitals and work with different surgeons who all do the same kind of surgery, but they'll do it a little differently. So they tend to pick and choose what they like and what they feel like they can accomplish and incorporate that into their own techniques. So really, every surgeon approaches it a little differently.
So I can imagine AI trained properly could offer two or three different options to surgeons. Here, you could try this, this, or that, and let them pick and choose.
I think what AI can do more than anything else is to bring all of the medical literature to your fingertips. It's really hard to read everything that's out there. There are thousands of articles that get published every week, and you just can't keep up with all of it. And even our major journals, in my specialty, well, there are only 8,000 plastic surgeons in the United States. That's a pretty small specialty, but we've got three or four major journals, each of which publish 150 articles a week. It's crazy. I mean, there's so much stuff out there. So AI can do searches for you and I can gather the data. And a lot of times we face problems that we haven't seen before. And I'm still seeing things today that I hadn't encountered previously. It's really amazing the things that people can develop. So if you want to look something up and you have an AI device or a program at hand, you can really gather all the relevant literature and be able to assess things with a full palate. So that's going to be a huge advance.
And virtual reality. I know in certain surgical specialties, surgeons are training with virtual reality and doing surgery virtually or practice surgery. Is there a room for that in ENT or plastic surgery?
Oh, absolutely. It's like that in all the specialties. They have, this started up around the same time that laparoscopy got started. That's where we, where the general surgeons and the OBGYN people were using these scopes to look inside the abdominal cavity. They had to train in using these techniques before they got the people. So they developed laboratories where they could do similar sorts of things with simulated patients who were either plastic models or just computerized. And they have it now for virtually every aspect of surgery, where the residents can go into a simulation lab and practice doing microsurgery, which is when we sew little tiny vessels together, or sew cut nerves together. And they have things that simulate the texture of these tissues. You have surgical suture and instruments, and you can just really learn a lot of the mechanics of surgery by doing that.
And then, I guess, the last area I can think of is the Da Vinci robot that a surgeon even remotely can direct surgery through a robot, a robot arm, if you would. Do you ever see a day that AI would do that?
I guess it's certainly plausible. I don't know. I mean, AI is not perfect at this point. because there have been errors that have come up when they studied AI. In fact, if you ask an AI device questions that they can't answer, they will make up data. These are all little bugs in the system that I think will work out eventually. So it's certainly quite possible. But there's a lot of decisions that you make in surgery that depend on exactly what you see and what you find and how things look and feel. It's really hard to imagine exactly what you're going to get into until you're there. And I don't know. I guess it's possible.
Yeah. I remember when I was a pediatric pulmonology fellow, HIV just came on the scene. This is back in the 80s. And my old-time mentor said, well, I'm glad I wanted to learn about this because it's going to change medicine. And it sure did. And so I guess sometimes, well, I'm glad I'm doing counseling this day as opposed to in 10 years when I'm obsolete.
Absolutely.
Well, when we come back from the break, I want to talk to you about the psychology involved in plastic surgery, especially cosmetic surgery. So I have a lot of questions about that. Our special guest, Dr. Mark Granick, professor of plastic surgery at the Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unvar.
Coming attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Unvar to be published early 2025. Dr. Unvar's renowned counseling practice, CenterPoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Unvar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Unvar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrUnvar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Unvar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterPointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unvar. Special guest, Dr. Mark Granick, who is a plastic surgeon specializing in ENT. He's explained to us a little bit about what reconstructive surgery is and plastic surgery, and we talked about the past and the future. But I like to show, in this show, I focus on the psychology of people, and I'm wondering if you can explain why do people seek cosmetic surgery, and then how do you evaluate them if they're appropriate?
Well, that's actually when you make a decision about whether you're going to offer a plastic surgical procedure to a patient, you have to take that aspect of their personality into account. You don't want somebody who is going to feel that having a nose job, for instance, will change their life. I mean, it doesn't. It simply doesn't. And if you have people that are down about themselves, depressed, and they think that having a cosmetic operation is going to change their lives for the better, they'll be disappointed and upset about things. It simply doesn't. We also have a lot of people that have unrealistic expectations. Anytime you make an incision, there's a scar, for instance. Now, we have all kinds of ways of making incisions to try and disguise them, but there's a scar there. And you have to be aware of that. And you really have to know what the limitations of surgery are and be accepting of those limitations. Otherwise, you'll have something done, and you're not going to be happy. So the goal with aesthetic surgery is, like everything else in medicine, do no harm. You want to make somebody feel better about themselves, and you want to make people feel more confident, but you don't want their expectations to exceed your ability to make changes. And that's where you run into trouble if you don't assess that properly at the beginning. So every patient that we operate on, we sort of screen to make sure we are comfortable that they understand what's going on and that their expectations are reasonable.
Give me an example of a reasonable expectation.
Well, somebody comes in and they had an accident that left their nose a little crooked, and they want a nose that looks straight because they had a straight nose before and they're unhappy that their nose doesn't look the same. And they also have a little trouble breathing. So that's an operation that you can do with a high degree of success. You can straighten the nose. You can improve the breathing. You can correct abnormalities inside the nose, which can affect breathing as well. And then you have a happy patient. But if somebody comes along and they have a crooked nose and they think that nobody likes them because their nose is crooked or their earlobes are too big, or something like that, and they're just fixated on it, that is a warning sign. So you try to make sure that your judgment is good in terms of who you operate on and, you know, how you discuss things with patients. They have to know what the risks are and what the capabilities are and what to expect after an operation.
I guess a very famous person who had plastic surgery would be Michael Jackson. I remember how he sort of transformed himself in the 80s. Do you have any comment on that? It seemed like to me that he just like he changed his appearance, but I don't think it made him happier. What maybe you can't say?
Well, I you know, he was an amazing talent, but he had some very strange expectations, and he's not somebody that I would operate on. But they went ahead and did things, and I don't know whether he was happy or not with it. I mean, he still looked like Michael, and I think he was satisfied with it. No, I'm not sure.
So you said...
What's that?
I'm sorry. You said you wouldn't operate on him, so a patient comes to you, and you'll say, I don't think... Well, what would you give a reason as why you wouldn't operate?
Well, one of the things we try not to do is we try not to change people's ethnic identity through surgery. So if you have somebody who has certain features that sort of define their ethnicity, you can make them less harsh, less dramatic, soften them a little bit, but you don't want to eliminate them. You want them to, you know, still be part of their group and look the part. So you got to be cautious when you do these things.
So if you don't do the surgery, do you refer them to somebody else, or you say you're on your own? What kind of What do you tell them?
Well, generally, what I would tell them is that I don't think I could accomplish what they expect from surgery, so I'm not going to do it.
Do you ever refer people to mental health professionals?
I do, and it's very hard to get somebody to see a mental health professional. A lot of times they get upset when you bring up that as a point. There's a thing called body dysmorphic syndrome, where people obsess about certain aspects of their body, which other people wouldn't notice, but to them it's a major problem and deformity, and they will often seek out all kinds of wacky surgeries to try and correct it in their mind. And they're never happy with anything you do, because that whole concept of body type is just very abnormal. So those people, we try to get some guidance before we do anything. And I also see people who have all kinds of strange behaviors. I've seen a number of people who were involved in self-mutilation in one fashion or another. People who would scratch themselves to the point where they had wounds. People who have put coat hangers down, casts and injured their tissues underneath. People have injected areas of their bodies with various things to change them and end up with all kinds of problems. So we see a lot of unusual behaviors. And our psychiatric colleagues are very helpful if you can get them involved.
Are the psychiatric colleagues willing to get involved?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, you know, these people who scratch themselves. I had one guy who came in and he took his hat off and he says, I've got this wound. And he had about a 3-inch diameter hole in his scalp that went right down to his skull. So yeah, I just talked to him. I said, well, how did that happen? And he says, well, you know, it was itching. I scratched it. And, you know, he had blood under his fingernail. So, you know, we talked about it. And I said, you know, I can get that wound to close, but I don't want you to reopen it so we can see somebody. So you went off to a psychiatrist, and there's actually medication that specifically helps people with that problem. Yeah, so that was great. He was a lot better. Oh, the next time I saw him, he had scratched off part of his nose. That was several years later. I guess he stopped taking his meds.
Wow. How complex people can be.
They can be.
We'll be right back after these messages. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unvar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar, special guest, Dr. Mark Granick, who is a plastic surgeon specializing in ENT. We talked about appropriate plastic surgery, such as when somebody's been disfigured by an accident and wants to put things back together. And we talked maybe about inappropriate plastic surgery, in my terms, when somebody's trying to hope that life will improve because you're going to change a feature in their body. Oftentimes they're disappointed if they go through with the surgery. So, Mark, you've been in a career for 40 years, and I'm sure you've had many interesting cases over the years. Could you share one with us that you find surprising or is especially instructive in your field?
One of the things that I'm interested in, and the reason I got involved with surgical wound management, is because surgeons are not paying a lot of attention to wounds, and chronic wounds, that is. So I started by getting involved with various wound technologies. And one of the technologies that came along was a kind of graft that was very novel, where we would take a piece of sample of somebody's skin, send it over to a laboratory that would break it up into clusters of stem cells, and you could then spread it over a wound, and presumably the wound would heal. And when I started using that, I had a patient who had been in an accident, and both his legs were injured. One leg, they had to do incisions to control swelling in his leg. Those are called fasciotomies, and they put a regular skin graft on it, and those healed. The other leg just never healed. They tried skin grafting it a couple times. So he came to see me, and he was already maybe 3 or 4 years out from his injury, and he had a leg with a healed skin graft and the other leg with a chronic open wound. So I cleaned everything off with that one of these devices that I had developed for wound cleaning, and then sent away to have some of his skin treated in that fashion, spread this stuff all over his leg, and he ended up with skin that was almost normal on that leg. It was growing hair. We did all kinds of tests on him to assess the physical natures of his skin, compared it to his normal skin, and compared it to the skin graft that he had. And it was remarkable how the graft that I had put down was almost identical to normal skin. So to me, that was one of the most amazing things that I've done with this new technology. As far as patients, man, I mean, I've seen so many people, and I have colorful stories to tell you about virtually any type of operation. But by and large, I would say most of the patients that I've had have been patients who needed help with something, and I did my best to help them, and the vast majority of them were very happy with things. So things have worked out well, by and large. I'd say probably, looking back on it, the patients who were the happiest were women who had breast reductions. That really affected their lives in a positive way.
So if we can just go back to the skin graft story, could you explain what a skin graft is?
A skin graft is a technique that evolved over about 200 years And what we do is take a very thin slice of skin off of the surface. So it involves the outer layer of the skin, which is referred to as the epidermis, and a little bit of the underlying tissue, which is called the dermis. And we then move it from the spot where we removed it to another part of the body, which has an open wound, and put it down there, sew it in place. We do all kinds of modifications to it, punch holes in it, mesh it, do all kinds of things. But basically, it just gets moved from one part of the body to another. So in patients with burns, for instance, burn wounds, if they're deeper, can't heal themselves. So you have to do something to help out. And skin grafting is the mainstay for repairing people who have burn injuries. It's useful for a lot of other things. I mean, we do tons of skin grafts. Nowadays, there's another device that came about over the past 20 years, is a device that allows you to take an extremely thin piece of skin and treat it with enzymes. And enzymes will cleave structures between proteins. And what this enzyme does is it breaks the bonds between the cells in the skin so that the skin cells become free, and you can then scrape them off, clean them, put them into a buffer solution, and put them in a syringe with a spray top and spray them on the wound. So it's basically a spray-on skin graft. And I've been using that a lot over the last couple of years, and it's just amazing.
It does sound like science fiction. So
it does indeed. It does, yeah.
When you take a graft elsewhere in the body, does it leave a scar where you took the skin from?
Well, yeah, donor sites always leave a scar, but with this spray-on stuff, we take such a thin piece of skin that the scars are negligible. In fact, we even take some of the leftover spray-on stuff and spray it back on the wound where we borrowed the skin from, so it heals very fast.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Almost Star Trek level. What, and explain how this, you talked about spraying stem cells. Can you explain more how the stem cells are found, or how, where they get them from?
Well, the person who developed the company had done some basic science work, and he was looking at stem cell clusters. They do tend to cluster in certain areas of the body, and one of the areas is in the hair follicles. So a hair grows from underneath the skin, and the point where it grows is called a follicle. And there are all kinds of cells around there. And there are typically clusters of stem cells in that vicinity. So if you target the hair follicles and in some fashion separate them from the rest of the skin, you can cluster up a lot of stem cells. And the stem cells have the ability to change into a variety of other kinds of cells depending on the environment that they're put in. So if we put them on the skin, the cells will stratify and create all the different layers of the skin and the tissue underneath the skin. So it's pretty phenomenal how that works. One of the problems with stem cells is that a lot of companies got in into business on a basis of being able to use human tissue and making relatively minimal change to it. It doesn't require the kind of studies that the FDA used to require of all kinds of drugs and things. And so a lot of companies got in and started using stem cells for crazy things that just didn't work. But this, what I've been talking about, is pretty amazing. You can really see it being used for something worthwhile.
These stem cells, can they do, like if you put them in the blood, they'll become blood cells, or are they skin stem cells? They only do skin things.
Well, they'll do other things, but you can't really put them in blood because they're too particulate. I mean, you have to put, like, liquids into the blood. I'm not sure how you would get them there. You'd probably have to separate the cells completely. And every environment's a little different.
Body is amazing, and science is amazing. Well, thank you for sharing these modern well, they're not science fiction anymore. They're modern marvels with us. We'll be right back after these messages. This is Center Point with Dr. Ron Unbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. Or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Anbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar, special guest, Dr. Mark Granick, a professor of plastic surgery, who's taken us on a grand tour of his career, of ENT, of plastic surgery, of the psychology of plastic surgery, and now into the amazing advances in science and technology that are changing the field. So you've had a career of 40 years, Mark, and I often ask in this last segment, there are three tips that you can give our listening audience of things they can do today to help maintain or improve their health. What would you say based on your experiences?
Well, you know, my experiences as a doctor in general probably better at answering that than my experiences as a plastic surgeon. Although the one combination thing is don't smoke and use sunscreen. That's one tip. Both of those things are important. Sunscreen protects your skin and it keeps you from getting wrinkles. Smoking makes everything go bad. So keep away from that. Otherwise, I think your psychological state makes a huge difference in the way your body functions. And the best thing is to try to be positive and to socially interact with people and to have things that you do outside of your work. And try to develop hobbies that you enjoy and work with, even if it's something like reading or watching certain kinds of TV. But things that make you happy are really useful. And as far as plastic surgery goes, and be careful who you choose. Make sure you have a board-certified plastic surgeon if you're going to have any kind of aesthetic surgery done. There are a lot of people out there doing crazy things, but the board-certified plastic surgeons tend to be the best trained of all of them. And ask questions. You want to know everything about any kind of surgery and make a proper decision before you go ahead with it.
So if we could just go back to sunscreen in a moment, because our audience is very young. Can you explain why it's so important to use sunscreen?
Well, sunscreen, at least the kinds we have now, it does protect your skin from getting wrinkly when you're older, from getting dry and scaly when you're older. But even more importantly, it affords some protection from developing skin cancers. And skin cancers are pretty common. It's astonishing how many people have them. And the people who tend to get them are the people with fair skin or the people who just have a lot of sun exposure and have not used sunscreens. So if you're outside and it's even cloudy days still have ultraviolet light coming through them. It's the ultraviolet light that's harmful. So sunscreens really play a big role in preserving your skin and keeping it safe. Yeah, so you should use them.
And is there any particular sunscreen you recommend, like SPF 100, 20? There's lots of sunscreens out there.
Well, in general, the SPF is just the amount of protection from the sun. You have to find a sunscreen that you are comfortable wearing, but the SPF 30 to 50 is really the range that you're looking for. And I think that the brand probably does make a huge difference. The consistency, I'm allergic to most sunscreens personally. So there are two brands that I can use that are primarily titanium oxide. Anything other than that, maybe zinc oxide. I break out in a rash, and a lot of people have those issues. So assuming you're not allergic to anything, you can pretty much go with any brand that that you like. That covers the major ultraviolet rays. There's a couple of different types of ultraviolet light, so you want to make sure all of them are covered. And use an SPF of 30 to 50. And every day. So when you wake up in the morning, it should be part of your routine.
And you mentioned smoking. So can you talk a little bit about smoking marijuana versus cigarettes?
Well, most of my experience comes from people who smoke cigarettes. I don't know that I can really say that much about marijuana, but I would think that putting any kind of smoke in your lungs is not a great idea. I think you can get the effects of marijuana in ways other than smoking, and that certainly would be preferable because smoking can damage your lungs. And notoriously, cigarettes are the leading cause of lung cancer. But they have a myriad other effects. They cause your skin to age. They make you more susceptible to a whole bunch of different diseases. They cause cardiac disease, hypertension, which is high blood pressure, and really have a lot of deleterious effects on the body. So, smoking is not a good thing.
Is smoking related to cancer in the ear, nose, and mouth?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the major cause of cancer of the head and neck.
And then what about vaping? Does that cause problems in terms of cancer?
Frankly, I don't know that much about vaping. I think it's mostly a pulmonary irritant. But I think if it's around long enough, we'll find out.
Right, so vaping is relatively new. I remember when we were growing up, people didn't even admit that cigarettes caused cancer. It took 30 years from the time they knew about it before the public realized it.
Well, when I was a medical student, the big study that really revealed the adverse effects of smoking was the Framingham study. That's Framingham's a town in Massachusetts, and they studied a population of about 25,000, 30,000 people over a period of many, many years. And when I was either an intern or a late medical student, they were just introducing some of the outcomes. So I went to see this. I had heard all about it. And I was sitting in this auditorium, and probably a third of the doctors were smoking as we went in. And a heart surgeon was there. This was at the Peter Van Brigham. And he was talking about the effects of smoking in this population of people. And the effects were so devastating, there were no lit cigarettes at the end of the meeting. Everybody was putting their cigarettes out as time went on. It was really dramatic. But the knowledge of the deleterious effects of cigarettes just keeps growing. It is definitely a very bad thing to do. You got to keep away from cigarettes. As far as marijuana goes, I'm sure if you smoke heavily, it's going to cause some lung issues, but it doesn't have all of the nicotine and some of the other nasty things that go along with cigarettes. And at this point, it's not highly processed either. Nevertheless, I would say a better alternative is to take something like a chocolate or a brownie or something else and munch on it instead of smoking.
And even better, learn to self-regulate with things like hypnosis and skip the external drugs.
Well, if you can do that, that's the best. Yeah, absolutely.
No side effects.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way to go. Well, even if you don't use hypnosis, just keeping a positive attitude really makes a big difference.
That's right.
Don't freak out over little things.
Dr. Mark Granick, I really appreciate your sharing this hour with us and teaching us about plastic surgery and life in general. Thank you. We appreciate you.
Okay. Thanks, Ron. Good to speak with you.
Likewise. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.